Rockout is still cold. The Hellraiser is back.
Here we go. Evolution of the Shield.
John Cena versus the Showstopper.
Hulk Hogan and The Rock in the same ring.
You will never take my place at the head of the table.
Undertaker with a Hellscape submission. Oh, my God.
What?
My God, Michaels just kicked Cena's head off.
The Monday Night Wars have come to WrestleMania.
It'll be The Rock. It'll be Austin one-on-one.
Third and fourth, the Undertaker.
Do you believe in miracles?
The streak is over.
Hey, what's up, guys? And welcome back to Rivalries on the WWE Podcast. As we are here on this Friday, July 9th, as we are just 2 weeks away on the button here, or no, actually 1 week away from fans being back in the building consistently in WWE arenas, and it just cannot come fast enough, can it? Like, I think it's going to be a complete shock to the system in a very, very good way. To have crowds back, but I don't need to tell you guys that. You guys know exactly how much crowds mean to the product in professional wrestling. And I think we're going to go back to a time today where the crowd was really portraying the heat towards the biggest heel in the company, and that was Triple H. And the rivalry we're reviewing today is Triple H versus Goldberg in 2003, over the World Heavyweight Championship. And I gotta say, this is a rivalry that really isn't talked about enough. And I understand why it isn't, because in a lot of ways it was underwhelming. In a lot of ways it could have been bigger, and the longevity was really not that long. And I guess in the main reason as to why it lasted so short and why it doesn't really get a lot of recognition is because that's pretty much Goldberg's initial run with the WWE in a nutshell, is it not? He was with the company for just 1 year. And that's what we'll start today, is how Goldberg first showed up in WWE. And it was one of the most impactful debuts in the company in the post Monday Night War era.
What?
So, I think that you could make the case that that is the most impactful debut in WWE, because a guy who you can make the case is the most dominant character in the history of WCW Nitro, comes in and pretty much just squashes one of the biggest stars the industry has ever seen on the WWE side of things. And, you know, this was the night right after The Rock had, for all intents and purposes, ended the career of Stone Cold Steve Austin. And The Rock was a month away from completely stepping away from WWE in terms of being a full-time competitor. And this built to them main eventing Backlash, where Goldberg squashed him. And that really kick-started Goldberg's career in the WWE, specifically on Monday Night Raw. And for him to come in and absolutely destroy one of the biggest stars that Vince McMahon has ever created is pretty telling as to where they saw Bill Goldberg, both where he's at now in WWE and where what they want to do with him, how they viewed him in WCW, and how the fans respected him. Because obviously we know Goldberg nowadays, and everyone just groans when we hear his music hit, but at this time Goldberg was just this dominant force, and he was a badass. Like, I'm not gonna sit here and say that I resented and hated Goldberg as much as I do today. Goldberg at this time was awesome. He was really, really cool. And even though I wasn't a big WCW guy, and to be honest, I was just too young back when WCW was at their peak in, let's say, 97, 98, you know, I was 3-4 years old, but I've gone back, I've watched, I'm a huge fan of the movie Ready to Rumble, and Goldberg had a big, big role in that film. You know, it made sense what they were trying to do, but, you know, to come in and just absolutely squash The Rock, they really positioned Goldberg in a very powerful position. But you know what? This is something WWE needed to do, because whenever you look back on this time, let's say the latter half of 2002, right into early 2004, and specifically 2003 as an entire calendar year, WWE really needed a top babyface in the worst of ways. And, you know, as I previously mentioned, Stone Cold Steve Austin was now done as a full-time in-ring competitor, or an in-ring competitor as a whole. He never laced up the boots again after his match with The Rock at WrestleMania 19. The Rock, at this point a heel, was stepping away from the company forever in terms of being a full-time competitor. This was his last ever feud in WWE as a full-time competitor. And maybe somewhere down the line I'll review this rivalry specifically, because there is a lot to draw on just from Goldberg and The Rock, even though it lasted just 3 or 4 weeks and just resulted in one pay-per-view match at Backlash. But you look at what Triple H was doing at this time, and, you know, at this point, he had been World Heavyweight Champion, a championship that at this point in time had only existed for about 8 or 9 months, pretty much consistently for the entirety of that time, save for a little blip on the radar where HBK won the championship at Survivor Series and dropped it at the very next pay-per-view in December at Armageddon 2002 in the Three Stages of Hell match. But this was essentially the Triple H show right now on Monday Night Raw. And there really wasn't a main event level babyface for him to bounce off of. And, you know, they initially tried with Shawn Michaels. And as Matt and I reviewed either last week or a few weeks back on our What If segment exclusively on Patreon, specifically talking about Shawn Michaels, he never really got a run as the top-level babyface in terms of challenging for a championship, aside from that one-month-long run when he initially came back in late 2002. And, I mean, I respect what Shawn Michaels did when he came back. He, as Matt eloquently put, he was kind of on an 8-year farewell tour among his return in 2002. But, you know, if you go by rumors and what he said in his book, he didn't really want to be that main event level guy. He didn't want to carry the torch. He didn't want to be the world champion. And as a result, even though HBK was there to kind of bridge the gap and somewhat fill the void, it still left a massive position unfilled at the top of the card on Monday Night Raw. And you can make the case in all of WWE because Brock Lesnar was probably the top babyface in the company at this point. He had just defeated Kurt Angle for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania 19. But even him, he turned heel shortly thereafter in the summer of 2003. And we were still a ways away from Eddie Guerrero getting his main event level babyface push. Ditto for Chris Benoit. So WWE was still desperately trying to find the successors to Rock and to Austin. And you saw that firsthand of kind of like their struggles on what was going on Monday Night Raw. So following the short-lived HBK program with Triple H, and I mean, there's a caveat with that. They kind of feuded on and off all the way until the summer of 2004, where they met inside Hell in a Cell at Bad Blood. So their rivalry was kind of off and on for the better part of 2 years, but HBK would kind of, you know, slide down the card. He had a program with Jericho that culminated at WrestleMania 19, kind of started feuding with the lower ranked guys in Evolution, like Randy Orton and Ric Flair. But I mean, in a lot of ways, Triple H was always trying to find that next level main event guy. And in the summer, or rather the winter of 2003, we saw him attempt to do that with Scott Steiner. And Scott Steiner's main event push was one of the most underwhelming ones of all time. And there are rumors that him and Triple H in real life behind the scenes really did not get along. And, you know, Scott Steiner main evented, at least on the Raw side of things, the No Way Out pay-per-view 2003, right in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, I may add, right before WrestleMania 19, and then wasn't even on the WrestleMania card. So that kind of tells you where they viewed Scott Steiner. And I think he was always kind of built to be a heel. But again, they were in such a desperate need for a main event level babyface. And then you look at who tangled with Triple H at WrestleMania, Booker T. And that was one of the more controversial booking decisions, you know, making Triple H retain the championship along with, you know, the program and the storyline leading into that match at WrestleMania 19 between the two that was very racially controversial. I'll just kind of leave it at that. I'll leave it to you guys to go watch or do some research on the kind of story building towards that match if you so choose. But even Booker T, you know, he grew into a really great Hall of Fame worthy competitor over the years. But by early 2003, Booker T wasn't quite there yet. And I would make the case that when Booker T was at his absolute best as a main event level guy, he too was better as a heel. And we saw that in 2006 when he had his run as King Booker, obviously his best run in the WWE. And then we get to post-WrestleMania, and then they start pushing Kevin Nash versus Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship. They had a street fight at the one-time-only pay-per-view Insurrection, which was, I believe, the first-ever brand-exclusive pay-per-view, for the Raw side of things, at least, in the summer of 2003. They also had a Hell in a Cell match at, I believe it was Bad Blood 2003, and Triple H retained, needless to say, retained in all of these matches. And then you get to the go-home stretch of leading into SummerSlam 2003, a pay-per-view that I watched 2 days ago, I may add, or the main event at least, which is very relevant in this particular storyline. And this is when we really started seeing the build between Goldberg and Triple H start to brew. And it was kind of like a perfect storm because you had Triple H jumping from guy to guy to guy to guy over the, you know, preceding 6 months or so, really trying to find the perfect guy, protagonist, for lack of better terms, to bounce off of. And then you have Goldberg, who comes in, squashes one of the biggest stars the company has ever seen, defeats Chris Jericho at a pay-per-view, I believe it was Bad Blood 2003, and now his sights are set on the World Heavyweight Championship, and a championship he is very familiar with, because that World Heavyweight Championship was originally the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. So it made sense. And now you have a guy, finally, that has the legitimacy to go up against Triple H. And you can make that case for Shawn Michaels as well. But as I previously mentioned, he was not interested in doing that. But you look at a guy like Goldberg, who in a lot of ways just bled WCW. You can make the case that maybe Sting is that guy over Goldberg. But Goldberg was like that purebred WCW guy. And I think, you know, Sting made his name in the NWA, if I'm not mistaken, and then really hit his stride in WCW. Goldberg was that homegrown main event level talent and kind of WCW's claim to fame in that regard. So when Triple H and Goldberg finally crossed paths, you got the sense that finally, at long last, after pretty much a full calendar year of searching, they finally found the main event level babyface to dethrone Triple H that they were looking for.
Wow. Very confident. Very confident.
Now, the way I see it, champion. You stand out here, you say you're the best. You make it sound like you're invincible. Maybe in your own eyes. Because to me, you're nothing but another victim. And if you haven't figured it out, you're next!
Oh my! Triple H is next! You can cut this tension with a knife!
So Goldberg comes out to halt Triple H's gloating, as Randy Orton had just won a match, and this was right in the peak rise of Evolution. And like I said, just the visual in and of itself of seeing Goldberg stand toe-to-toe with Triple H was something we had not seen in probably a year and a half at this point, because you had Shawn Michaels kind of do this, but it was such a short-lived feud and he hadn't been on top of his game for 5 years or 4.5 years upon his return, that at least in my opinion, I'm sure if you watched him straight through the Attitude Era, but maybe as someone who kind of missed his main event level run, he didn't have as much legitimacy as, let's say, a Stone Cold Steve Austin or The Rock going toe-to-toe with Triple H. And then, like I said, they tried with Scott Steiner, it flopped. They tried with Booker T, it didn't really flop, but he was a victim of the bad booking or whatnot, but for whatever reason, it didn't work. Kevin Nash, kind of the same thing as Shawn Michaels, although Kevin Nash was never a superstar in this industry, at least in my opinion. And again, kind of a reoccurring theme here, he was always better as a heel, you know, as Diesel in WWE, although he got a babyface level push, and then in WCW with the NWO, the Outsiders, and all that. But when Goldberg marched to the ring, a guy who had never once been a heel, at least I'm pretty sure of that. Again, I'm not a big WCW guy. And kind of like that untapped resource of an injection of main event level superstar status to go up against the biggest heel in the company. And in a lot of ways, you could say he was the biggest star in the company. I guess at this point, you could make the legitimate case that that status belonged and was synonymous with Brock Lesnar. But I mean, once Brock turned heel again in the summer of 2003, right around this time, I don't know. I think you can make the case that Triple H's track record and legitimacy and multi-time world championship and, you know, his run with DX and now with Evolution, you had Ric Flair by his side. You could make the case that Triple H was the biggest star the company had to offer at this point. And I think that when you saw Goldberg come out and they go nose to nose and then they go on to kind of have a standoff with Ric Flair and Randy Orton at the side of Triple H, you know, a 3-on-1 matchup against Goldberg and Triple H elects to retreat to the back, it was really telling that, okay, they finally found the perfect match and the perfect yin to Triple H's yang. And the visual says it all, that it was the first time kind of since they split the brands, and I guess aside from Shawn Michaels, that you could really say that, oh my God, like they finally have a babyface that matches the star power and legitimacy of Triple H. So this ultimately leads to SummerSlam 2003 and the second ever Elimination Chamber match that featured Triple H defending his world championship against Goldberg, Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels, Randy Orton, although he was pretty much just in there to help Triple H, and Kevin Nash. And in my opinion, best chamber match ever. Bar none, no questions asked. And, you know, it starts with Jericho and Michaels, probably the two best workers in the match, aside from Triple H. And Kevin Nash gets eliminated first, and then in comes Goldberg last. But at this point, Triple H had lingered in his chamber, even although he was second last, he stayed in his chamber after eating a sweet chin music. And Goldberg just mutilates the field. He absolutely destroyed HBK, Jericho, and Randy Orton, and in consecutive order just eliminated them all. I think it was Orton, then it was Michaels, then it was Jericho. And I remember the spear he gave Jericho through the pod, and it didn't initially break, and then you had to see Goldberg give like a second effort to push Jericho through the plexiglass pod, and it just looked so painful for Jericho, and like it made you realize how strong Goldberg is, that like at a complete stop he could push a 230-pound man right through plexiglass. And he absolutely destroyed everyone, then broke the glass door to get to Triple H, destroyed Triple H, and then it ended with him going for a spear, Ric Flair sliding the sledgehammer to Triple H through the chain links, and he nails Goldberg in the head with a sledgehammer as he's in mid motion for the spear and gets the victory, knocking him out. And it's a finish that protects Goldberg because he destroyed everything in his path and then ultimately just got hit with a sledgehammer out of nowhere. And then they end up handcuffing him to the cell or to the chain links of the chamber and just bloodying him up, beating him with a sledgehammer. Randy Orton gets back in the chamber. And it really just kind of paints the picture of like, okay, Triple H is still this nasty SOB main event level heel with, you know, Ric Flair and the rest of Evolution at his side, although Batista was on the shelf at this point due to injury. But Goldberg is a legitimate badass, and we were just starting to see the tip of the iceberg in terms of this rivalry. And then it leads to the first ever one-on-one match between the two at Unforgiven 2003. And like I said, at this point, you have pretty much seen Triple H as the consistent world heavyweight champion for 12 months running, aside from that month-long period where HBK was world champion from Survivor Series to Armageddon in late 2002. So it's a long time coming now that you're waiting to see Triple H finally get his ass kicked. And when Goldberg finally got his one-on-one match with Triple H, the fans at long last got what they were asking for.
The world's heavyweight champion! How is Goldberg back to his feet after being slugged in the chops with that sledgehammer?
He's a damned animal. Goldberg is an animal. There's nothing like Goldberg.
The finish, Triple H off right now!
Front face lock by Goldberg on the bloody champion. Triple H is up. Will it be?
No.
Jackhammer! Survived it! Sledgehammer and all!
That sign said it best! Finally! Triple H has been defeated! Can you believe it?
Goldberg put his professional life on the line for one chance to become the heavyweight champion of the world! And by God, he has!
And once again, Jim Ross, just with a brilliant call, just losing his effing mind. But, I mean, Jerry Lawler said it all. Finally, at long last, Triple H loses the championship. And it took, you know, I mean, if you want to count HBK, you have HBK, Scott Steiner, Booker T, Kevin Nash, and now Goldberg. As it took five babyfaces, babyface counterparts rather, to finally dethrone Triple H, that at this point, and even if you don't want to count that, if you want to count rather the month-long run from Shawn Michaels, you were looking at almost a 10-month-long run as world champion for Triple H on Monday Night Raw. And they finally found the perfect guy to pull the trigger, because he was a guy, like him or not now, and you got to take out the context of what he has been since his return in late 2016, like squashing Bray Wyatt and squashing Kevin Owens, and we won't get into that. But at this point, in September of 2003, Goldberg was the right guy at the right place at the right time. Monday Night Raw needed a main event level babyface like Bill Goldberg. They needed a guy for the fans to cheer for. The, you know, Triple H was an awesome heel. Evolution, that during this period was arguably the best thing that WWE had going for it, specifically on Monday Night Raw. Because let's say on SmackDown, you had Kurt Angle, you had The Undertaker, you had Brock Lesnar, you had an up-and-coming John Cena, you had Benoit, you had Guerrero, but on Monday Night Raw specifically, they were kind of missing that main event level guy. And as we've heard numerous times in the past, Raw was more of an entertainment show, SmackDown was more of a wrestling show. And that's all well and good, but you need guys to entertain if that's what you're going to drive towards. And that's what Goldberg was. He's never going to put on a five-star match. But in terms of what he's good for, spear, clothesline, jackhammer, you know, there's not much that you're going to find better than Bill Goldberg. And this program stretched well into the later months of 2003. And, you know, they met at Survivor Series and Goldberg retained that the championship as well. So he had a fairly lengthy run here. And Triple H once again gets another chance to reclaim his World Heavyweight Championship at Armageddon 2003. But this time, it's in a triple threat match with Kane involved. And you got to remember, Kane was, what, 3 or 4 months long in, Jesus, easy enough for me to say it, guys, to his unmasking run when he turned heel in the summer of 2003. And actually, that was another babyface that kind of bounced off Triple H in the interim in the summer of 2003 before they got to Goldberg. I completely forgot about that, the whole infamous Katie Vick angle. And losing to Triple H in a match on Monday Night Raw ultimately led to Kane's unmasking, subsequently leading to his monster heel run and his great rivalry against Shane McMahon, which was the first ever rivalry I ever covered on this show. So that's another wrinkle into the long list of babyfaces that tried to dethrone Triple H as a world champion en route to Goldberg, ultimately doing so at Unforgiven in 2003. So these three meet in a triple threat match at Armageddon 2003. And the result is yet again a similar sight, an unfortunate similar sight for Monday Night Raw fans.
Head. Now look at this carnage, JR. The body's all over the ring and around the ring. Well, I gotta get some security out here. We'll get Flair and Orton the hell out of here. Goldberg's getting Kane to the ride. Oh, the game is down. And now Goldberg. He's trying to choke Santana, but he's choking him out. Even Goldberg can't do this, I don't think. Goldberg's trying to choke Kane out. And another disqualification match. But the leverage advantage here is with a 7-footer Kane.
So in what is looked on often back as the Evolution Night of Shine, as Flair and Batista won the tag team titles, Randy Orton won the Intercontinental Championship, and Triple H won the World Heavyweight title, Triple H is once again World Heavyweight Champion after not holding that title for just 3 months or so. And again, in classic Evolution fashion, Batista was involved, Orton was involved, Flair was involved, and Kane hits the chokeslam on Goldberg, Batista pulls Kane out of the ring, and Triple H capitalizes. And this was pretty much the end and the culmination of the Goldberg-Triple H rivalry. And I think in a lot of ways, it was the one of the better ones of the Ruthless Aggression era for Triple H. Because I think oftentimes during this era, in light of Austin and Rock stepping away, Triple H was kind of left empty-handed. Like, those two guys were the top two babyfaces during Triple H's meteoric rise as the main event level heel in late 99. And, you know, him and The Rock clashed numerous times and pretty much carried the company in 2000 while Austin was on the shelf. Him and Austin had a very, very awesome rivalry in the winter of 2000/2001. And now that The Undertaker was over on SmackDown exclusively, that was another guy that he had really bounced off of in the Attitude Era. But now in the Ruthless Aggression Era, he really lacked opponents that could match his star power. And Goldberg was that guy. Goldberg was the only guy, and this is including Chris Benoit, because, I mean, Chris Benoit was the next guy to dethrone Triple H as World Heavyweight Champion, as he ultimately won the Royal Rumble that followed this this pay-per-view and went on to win at WrestleMania 20. Goldberg was the only guy that matched the star power of Triple H until they ultimately got to Batista and John Cena, but they were still about 15 months away from that. You know, Batista conquered Triple H at WrestleMania 21, and John Cena got over to Raw and defeated Triple H at WrestleMania 22. So it was not until they got to pushing Batista and John Cena to the moon that they would ever truly find a main event level babyface that could stand toe to toe with Triple H in a figurative type of way, right? Because, you know, you have to believe what WWE is giving you. And when they were pitting him against guys like Steiner and Booker T and even Kevin Nash, like, you kind of knew in the back of your mind, like, okay, these guys don't stand a chance. They're not going to put the title on these guys. But when they bring in Goldberg and he squashes The Rock right out of the gate and, you know, he destroys Chris Jericho at a pay-per-view, and then you see what he did inside the chamber, although he ultimately lost by hook or crook, or hook and crook, whatever, you really kind of got the sense, like, okay, like, here's a guy that was a legitimate badass on Nitro, dominated WCW, one of the most dominating runs in the history of professional wrestling. They're doing the similar type of booking now in WWE on Monday Night Raw, and they did a lot of good things. And obviously, this led to Goldberg having the program with Brock Lesnar that led to their infamous first clash at WrestleMania 20. And then he walked away from the company for 12 and a half years. And I mean, maybe if he had signed more of a long-term contract with them, we would have seen him stay in the main event and the title picture more. I'm not sure why his first run with WWE was so short-lived. But either way, I could look back and say confidently that his initial run with the company in 2003 was an overwhelming success, even with his horrible first ever Mania match against Brock Lesnar, which was as forgettable as any. But in a lot of ways, he saved Monday Night Raw in the summer of 2003 all the way until the winter and really bridged the gap to get to Chris Benoit. And obviously at the Rumble, the succeeding pay-per-view to Armageddon, there was the famous match, the last man standing match between HBK and Triple H. And it felt fresh, right? Because at this point, HBK and Triple H had been separated for quite a while. And I believe that HBK had not had a one-on-one match against Triple H for the World Championship for 13 months by this point. So Goldberg stepping in and doing what he did with Triple H really kind of gave some time for Triple H and HBK to get away from one another. And then when it came back, it felt fresh and they tangled all the way until the summer of 2004, like I previously mentioned. But anyway, guys, that's all I got for you today. I hope you enjoyed Triple H versus Goldberg. As always, you can get me on Twitter at ADeMarco25. You can get Matt on Twitter at wrestling_audio. And as always, you can email him at realwwpodcast@gmail.com. And you could send questions for me as well. He would be happy to relay them to me. And as always, check out our Patreon exclusive show, What If, that will drop tomorrow. And it's a pretty good one, so I would suggest you go check it out. Anyway, guys, until next time, I'll talk to you next week.